What's up? It's your boy Jordan and Abraham. You all know he's a professional runner, so he's your fast friend. I'm an MD PhD student, so I'm your smart friend. And for the first time today, we have a producer who will, you know, hopefully be joining us for all future shows. His name's Alex, and he's our white friend. We have other white friends, but he is our most important white friend, at least, you know, as far as the show is concerned. Most importantly, hey, though, always.
I feel like
we are your
like I'm
friends.
Gonna
read one for you.
Jump in. I'm gonna jump in real
Okay.
quick. This is the second time. I was on the last pod.
That's true. That's true. You actually helped me out. You helped me out of a pickle. I couldn't it was a word. I think it was prophecy. I couldn't recall. And you know, you came through for me. Which is how
he
actually won the job. You know, it was.
And he told me I was pronouncing a word
go ahead,
wrong
go ahead.
Too. So, you know, the knowledge
yeah.
that this man
yeah.
is going to bring to the back end of our show is invaluable.
Yeah. No. He there was a very rigorous application process, and Alex beat out a number of qualified candidates in order to win the job. But as always, we are your friends who read One Piece. And we didn't get to do a lot of reading of One Piece over the last month because we were basically on break.
It was a scratchy few
so,
weeks, man. It was out. It was getting all scratchy
yeah.
up here, man. It was brutal.
Yeah. But it's Saturday. We got a chapter yesterday, chapter 1112 of Hard Aspect. What did you think? Why don't you give me a rundown of some of the things that happened, Jordan, some of the stuff that stuck out to you. Let me know what you thought.
Yes, sir, man. Well, we begin the chapter with the Marines getting a notification that all the pacifista have been defeated by Venus Jiro as he heads off to find Bonnie. Then to the Giants, as they attempt to escape, we see the Marines targeting their ship. And Mr. Aitchin, I forget his name, but that was the defining characteristic that we remember from him, comes after Frankie and gets absolutely one shot by Strong Right. Abraham, so that's kind of the first moment for me. What did you make of Frankie one-shotting this guy?
Yeah, I was glad. I don't know if you remember, but maybe like this is in the early chapter, like maybe like eight chapters ago or whatever. I thought Frankie was going to get his moment. It was one of my predictions for one of the weeks. Now, obviously, I was off by like 3 months or whatever because of all these drinks. But
right.
I'm glad that Frankie got a little bit of shine. I wanted him to get a little bit more attention on Vegapunk's arc because this is the science arc. You know, I'm glad Oda gave him a little bit of space to show what he can do. Hopefully there's more that we still have to come in terms of Frankie learning stuff on this island. But yeah, what did you think?
Yeah, well, you know, it's crazy how you're still talking about how he's going to get his arc because the science arc, when Zoro was supposed to have his arc because of the samurai arc, and Usopp just has to be, Elbaf has to be his arc because he's been in love with the Giants the whole time. Just saying, you know, it's one of those things where I definitely, it's, you know, he's getting his moment in terms of fighting, but I don't think we're seeing him get a lot of moments in terms of the science stuff. That said, I am really excited about what this means for our crew. I think it's cool to see that people like Frankie have actually leveled up to the, like, you know, when you're talking about whether this is a real Emperor's crew, like, yeah, we have the Straw Hat Grand Fleet is a really strong military force. Yes, we understand that Luffy, especially when he's in his Nika form, can compete with just about anyone in the world. But are his officers actually that strong is the question. And understanding that someone like Frankie, who's what no better than the fifth strongest guy on the crew, is able to one-shot a vice admiral definitely puts the strength of the Straw Hats at a level competitive with other military forces, whether it's other emperor's crews or just like understanding that our guys are better than just vice admirals.
No, for sure. And I mean, you think back to the fear people had about the Whitebeard commanders, right? All of the division commanders. Right, those are effectively the Straw Hat, the main Straw Hat crew.
Right.
And so I would hope that they do eventually scale to like even the weaker. I think Usopp could fight a vice admiral right now. I think Nami and Chopper could fight a vice admiral right now.
Oh man, come on, man. There, bro,
Um,
get Usopp could fight a vice admiral, man. Come on,
bro, there's
bro.
there are there's there
Bro,
are the large there's a big
stop,
range
dude.
in the vice admiral's strength. No, there is. There's a big like
Bro.
I'm not saying they would, bro. Well, first of all, I'm not saying they would one
Just
shot a vice admiral like Franky did, but I think Usopp, Nami, and Chopper could all have a competitive fight and possibly win against a vice admiral.
bro,
Not a strong vice admiral, but a weaker vice.
Usopp basically just got one shot in Wano by Ulti and or Page One or whatever combo of them it was. He had nothing to do. How in the world is he supposed to actually fight a
Okay.
vice admiral, bro? Like up close? Like is he fighting him from 300 yards away, or is he fighting him from up close?
I don't know. It would depend. Like I can see some, again, this is not a fight that's happening. I don't
Bro,
know why
this.
you're asking me to predict some fight that's happening. Regardless, what I'm saying, you need to stop distracting yourself. Big picture, the big picture is that these Straw Hat crewmates, I do think, are eventually going to scale to at least that level, if they're not already at that level. Like I think Sanji, not Sanji, Franky is like, the fact that he one shot this dude, maybe this guy is one of the weaker vice admirals, right? But like
Right.
there's a gap between someone like Franky and the rest of the crew. But I think at the very least, eventually they will get to the point where something like Chopper versus a vice admiral or Usopp versus a vice admiral is a very, very legitimate conversation, if not just a straight up win for some of these Straw Hats. Because I think back to the Whitebeard Commanders,
Man.
and I think the 10th Division Commander could take on a Vice Admiral. Do you not?
That might be true. I just don't know if Usopp has division is division commander material. That's all I'm saying.
You just keep on holding on to Usopp. I'm not just talking about this. You need to get rid of your Usopp virus. We already talked about Usopp last week.
The rest of them, I'm complete. Bro, I just can't believe that you would make me be this tempted to bring out the gag this early in the show. You like, if I hadn't brought out the crack dealer gag last week, I would already be
Whoa.
on the phone and we're like 5 minutes in this podcast. But I do think that the point you're making as far as the Straw Hat strength relative to the rest of the crews is probably true and interesting. I think there's a question of like exactly what does this mean in terms of how our crew measures up to the military. And exactly how, or the Navy, and exactly how, like, what sort of force would it take for the full Straw Hats to be able to go up at full strength against the Navy is an interesting question. I don't think we're actually gonna end up there, but like, if Franky's one-shotting a Vice Admiral, how close are the monster trio to the Admirals themselves? How close is Franky to an Admiral himself, if that's the ease with which he can
Not
dispose
close.
of? It's
Not close.
I think it's an interesting question at the very least. But anyway, we jump back to the broadcast from Vegapunk. He wants to drink some coffee, but it's going to burn his tongue. York has led Marus to the Labostratum, but tells him not to destroy the entire lab because it would destroy Punk Records. I'm kind of curious why Mars actually cares about destroying Punk Records or not, but I think that's not going to be a big topic for this week, something just to chew on as we look towards the future. He detects a small life form above and goes in search of the specially created video snail that is being broadcasted. And then we find Stussy and Kaku together in the room Mars just left. Kaku remarks on the elders' repulsive transformations and asks Stussy if she feels betrayed as the Straw Hats are about to escape. She remarks that she stayed of her own volition because someone needed to be there to carry out this final mission. Abraham, is Stussy going to die here? What do you think? What's happening with her?
I'm hesitant to say she's gonna die because Oda has a hard time killing off characters. Like, she's in the exact same situation Bon Clay was in. Actually, or worse. Oh no, Bon Clay was in a worse situation than she was in.
He might have been. Yeah, he might have
And
been.
Bon Clay is still alive. So I think, should she die? If she carries out this task, probably. Will she die? I don't actually. I have my doubts that that will happen because of the history of Oda.
The thing for me that makes it seem like she can't die is she has too much narrative possibility right now for the, we have someone who's a clone who has spent a lot of time with the mad scientists, Judge, Caesar, Queen, and is Vegapunk's the last one, right? That's the four in Mads. So we have someone who
I
spent a
think
lot of
so.
time with them. Yeah. So we have someone who spent a lot of time with the mad scientists who probably has some level of understanding of exactly what the science in this world looks like beyond what we understand, who was also a clone of someone who was once a member of the Rocks Pirates. And there's also a whole extra question about how much of the will of the original person do clones have? Because what we've seen with Seraphim is they do maintain certain characteristics, such as Boa Hancock maintaining her love for Luffy in Seraphim form. So to me, it just opens up this real sense of it's a character that can't die, because especially if Vegapunk dies, like who is supposed to talk to the Straw Hats for a second about like science?
Yeah, so I think I don't agree with the importance of her character, to be honest, going forward in the series for a couple of reasons. One, I don't think all of the Vegapunks are going to die in this arc. I think the Stella is already dead unless, some futuristic medicine stuff brings him back.
Right.
I'm assuming the Stella is dead. I think at the very least one of the satellites will be able to escape and
I
maybe
think Stella
even
got
win
a couple
Stella with
words.
the
Yeah, I think Stella got a couple dying words, but that'll be it, right? Like, I don't think Stella's going around with Straw Hats after this.
Yeah. But I don't think all the Vegapunks are destroyed at the end of this, right? So your question about who's gonna teach them about, science, the ancient kingdom or whatever it is specific knowledge that Vegapunk has, we still have the satellites. And as for clones, I think that position could we know that Weevil is still in the story. I personally still think that Weevil is a clone of Whitebeard. Now maybe he was one of the earlier clones, so it didn't
So
actually
that's why he's so ugly.
work all that well. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. But we still have Weevil. We know he was just Oda went out of his way to show that he was captured and but Miss Buckingham was like, I can't remember who she approached. It might have been Marco or something to try and get Weevil back, but I think they're going to be involved in the story. So if we need to dive deeper into all of this lore about what these clones are, the will of living beings, and all that stuff, I think it could be filled by those characters pretty easily. So I don't actually think she's going to be an integral character going forward in the story.
What I'll say is, I think that it's one thing, it's not just a question of can anyone else fulfill this role. It's a question of why was this character introduced now? Or at the very least, why was this character revealed to be who she was now? Obviously, we've known about Stussy since at least Whole Cake Island, but this is the only one we've come to know that she's actually a clone. And so I think there's, I'll say one of the tropes that I really hate is a character feeling like they're introduced just to die in that arc. I think Night Eye is an example. Night Eye is the old All Might's old sidekick, right? And it's not like Nightwing is Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nightwing is Robin, the new. Yeah,
Yeah.
okay.
I got
Yeah,
you.
it's like Night Eye basically gets introduced in this arc. He doesn't exist. We don't even know about sidekicks. Then he gets introduced, basically just to have a sad moment at the end of the arc where he dies, right? I think you could make a pretty strong argument that for a lot of the Red Scabbers, the one who are not Kinemon and Dogstorm and Arashi, or just whatever, same the ones who we did not meet in Zo and/or earlier, I think it feels a lot like people like Ashura Doji were introduced just so they could die, right? Like we met him, and now there's a sad character who died, and we don't have to like feel like we've built up hundreds of chapters of solidarity and emotions with. And so to me, the Stussy death would feel very weak because we haven't had very much time with her. And I think if we're gonna have this moment that she's introduced at the sort of intersection of the story where we're going to begin to learn a lot more about the nature of the world, about exactly where the science comes from. is this is really the arc where we learn that cloning is and has been a thing for a while, and we're going to begin learning more about the Rocks Pirates almost certainly as we careen towards the end of the series. I think it seems reasonable to think that Stussy's going to be a part at the very least, or have more to do than just sending the Straw Hats on their way. Whether or not, I'm not saying I think she's going to end up adventuring with them, but I think she's going to have a little bit more to do than just, okay, you guys go ahead and get out, and I'm going to sacrifice myself.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it would be a weak death. I don't think Oda could try and write it emotionally, but I don't think it would be all that successful. But I can think of other characters in the series that were introduced basically in one arc and died in that arc, right? Like, I see, what's his name? Pedro in Whole Cake Island, because
Right, Paige is
sure,
another
they
one, yeah.
technically introduced him. Yeah, they technically introduced him in Zo, but not really. He was only really a part of Whole Cake.
You're like, he was there, but not really.
Yeah, I think you could say the same thing about Tell. Tell was introduced in Alabasta. He didn't die. He should have died. He didn't die. But he was introduced in Alabasta, and Oda wrote this whole emotional death scene for him to save everyone. So I wouldn't
I mean,
rule out
Pell's a little
that
different
he
because it's
died.
earlier in the series, but yeah, Pell's a little different because it's early in the series and he's with them the whole arc. Stussy just kind of, it turned out she was a vampire. We've spent pretty minimal time with her so far with the crew. But I do agree, it's something that he has done before. It's not something that I'm particularly in favor of, but this one would feel like we've gotten particularly little for her at a particular point where this character would have a lot to add with a slightly more complex role. So we'll see what happens there. What happened next in the chapter was we jump back to the crew making their final preparations to leave. Edison bombs through the lavosphere to create a space for the last coup to burst, says he's not going to die, something like 78% explosion rating or something like that. And the Straw Hats are unsure how they're going to get across that distance. We go back to Luffy, where Luffy, Dory, and Bragi are trying to escape from Jupiter, who comes after them with his big old mouth. You know that I have found that mouth humorous and interesting over the last couple months. Don't be
Say
making
the least.
that face. Don't be making that face every time.
You could talk about Jupiter without bringing that up. Like, I feel like you bring it up just to see me make that face.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I kind of do. At this point, I kind of do. I just thought it was a funny characteristic. And then Luffy turns a little building to rubber and shoves that building down the big old mouth before turning into an old man. After a bit of food, he returns to health and tries to Red Rock Warkiri in Gear Third, but it hurts his hand. He's really holding it out there, like, ow, ow, ow. What'd you make of that?
Yeah, I think it. I think that that's a good sign for the Gorosei because it gives me hope that they have some supreme, either supreme armament haki, or maybe this is just something related to the devil fruits, right? When Luffy was fighting in Gear Fifth and, possibly using advanced conquerors and whatnot, he didn't have those issues. But the last time I remember seeing Luffy do that is when he was fighting Katakuri, and Katakuri had much harder armor and haki than he did. And this whole time we've talked about, oh, the Gorosei are damaged tanks. They have what look to be like these, pretty strong demonic powers. Maybe they're devil fruits, maybe they're not. But we hadn't really seen much in terms of displays of haki. So I think this is a good sign that they, at least with respect to how powerful they will be as endgame villains.
I think that your point about the nature of their haki is what is most interesting about this to me. I think that, like you said, the last time we saw that was in Whole Cake Island with Katakuri, and it's one of those things where we both kind of don't think they just have devil fruit powers. We know that they have some kind of haki that literally is making people's heads explode when they like look at them, right? It's like, ooh, I'm not strong enough. I looked at you, my head just like popped off. And so I think to me, there's something about haki that we may not necessarily Understand. Maybe this has something to do with how strong Shanks' Conqueror's Haki is, especially given that there's implications that he actually comes from, the god lineage, the same place. He's like might be a world noble, being part of the Fagarlin family.
Figurland family.
Yeah, and so to me, like, there's something here about the nature of the world. I know that I've been talking a lot about thinking that what's coming next is like a reveal about something that we don't understand about the nature of the world. And I wonder if our explanation for Haki, I wonder if we're going to get some kind of interesting explanation for Haki that helps us understand how the Elder Stars have things that like make people's heads explode, how they have the kind of Haki that when Luffy isn't in Gear Fifth form actually really hurts him to even like try and damage them. And actually, have we even seen him? Because we know Red Rock is with Strong Armin. Have we actually seen him just like straight up punch an Elder Star to this point? I feel like we should have, but I know we have like the baseball bat, we have like him flying around
Yeah.
like Saturn, him throwing Saturn like a USO, but has he actually just like punched someone?
I don't remember. I there's no punch that comes to mind, so I feel like the answer is no.
That would be interesting, at the very least, to think about if maybe that's something that he actually hasn't done, that's something that would actually hurt him. So I don't know, it'll be interesting as we learn more about the nature of Haki and like what their super special power might be, because obviously something seems particularly abnormal about them.
Yeah, I don't really think that their special powers, like these demonic powers, are related. Haki. I see these as two distinct power sources. Yeah, I think it's an interesting thought. I don't think there's any relationship between those demonic powers and Haki
Interesting.
is just willpower, right?
And so you think
Personally.
that like Luffy hurting his hand is a result of their kind of demonic powers, but not some kind of different type or different level of Haki?
Oh no. I think it was because of some advanced armament that Mercury or Warcury has. But I think he could have that advanced armament regardless of whether or not he had that demonic devil fruit or whatever. Right? I don't think him maybe I was misunderstanding what you
Oh
were saying, but the impression I
yeah,
got from what
totally,
you said is
No, I agree with you on that. I don't think that that necessarily has to do with the devil fruit, but I do think that it might be some type of power where Luffy should be able to use Conqueror's Haki. So this shouldn't be like him hitting someone shouldn't be something that causes him pain at this point in the series. And I think that if we have a greater understanding for the type of power that they have, I think people's heads exploding seems more in line with a different type of Conqueror's Haki than it does with their devil fruit abilities too. And I think maybe not only might we come to understand something about their powers in the demonic way, but we also might come to understand something about the powers of Haki and what's special about them in that way.
that's fair.
Yeah, which I
Yeah,
don't have a clear answer for you.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. And as we approach the end of the chapter, it ends with Saturn approaching the Wheat Crew, Nami, Chopper, and what's the other guy's name again? Who is in the Wheat Crew because he's super wheat?
The greatest Straw
The
Hat.
super weak, the incredibly weak, just no moments in the last 700 chapters. Oh, Usopp, yeah,
Whoa.
that's right, that's right. That's right. No,
I
no, that's
might
not Usopp.
start
Wheat
calling
Crew
you.
at the Lava Stratum. Venus
Yes.
Juro. And then Saturn approaching the Wheat Crew at the Lava Stratum. Venus Juro with a terrifying silhouette in front of Bonnie. And Mars reaching Punk Records and the special Den Den Mushi. He's not going to stop it, right?
I think the no, I mean, maybe I should save this for my prediction because my prediction for I'll just say it now. I was gonna
Okay,
I my prediction for the next chapter was gonna be related to this, but I'll just say it now. I think that Mars and Gorosei will stop the broadcast before it finishes, and there's going to be like one key piece of information that doesn't make it out, kind of like how in O'Hara, Clover, he does give us a decent amount of information about oh, you know, the void, this is, there was a void century, and then this happened, and that happened, and he gets cut off right before he can say the name of the ancient kingdom. I think that maybe this transponder snail, we don't know how it operates. Maybe that's not even the real source of what the projection is, and so that Mars is not going to be able to stop the broadcast immediately. Some information is going to get out. But I feel like I don't expect the whole story to make it. Like the Gorosei will to some degree be successful and stop maybe some key piece of information from being broadcast to the world.
That's a solid prediction. I'll just jump into my prediction because it's also related too. I think we're going to get the beginning of the broadcast. I don't think that it's going to get stopped. I think we might even find that it's like secretly coming from elsewhere. Vegapunk had some kind of backup plan, but rather than thinking that the whole thing is going to get stopped and we're not going to get all of it, I think that especially like next week, we're just going to begin to get a bit of the story, a bit of the background. And I think it might even potentially launch us into some kind of flashback. I think that what we're gonna begin to get is, I don't know, did you read Attack on Titan or watch Attack on Titan?
I watched it.
I think this is gonna be similar to the like founder, here's what the founder Ymir is significance, right? Or something where like in Full Metal, where it's like, here's the whole tale of Xerxes and exactly where the homunculus and the flask was, and it gives you an idea of the first time that an entire civilization was taken for a philosopher's stone. But I think that we're going to just begin to hit the tip of that. And I think over the next few chapters, we might dive into the flashback. I think it's interesting what you said about the idea that we might not get the whole thing here. I've tended to think that we're actually going to get the whole thing because we're so close to the end game of the story. But I do think at the very least, the next, like we're going to get more explanation of whatever was on the broadcast from different characters in the story to the Straw Hats.
I'll also say the reason I don't expect us to get everything here is because I do want when Robin finds the Rio Poneglyph or whatever, that there's some new information that she learns. And maybe Vegapunk just doesn't know the information that's on the Rio Poneglyph because it probably hasn't been found ever and read. I think that's something that, could be revealed to us once we make it to Last Day Isle, once we find that Rio Poneglyph.
Well, I think there's sort of a dichotomy between science and history here, right? And I think Vegapunk has a lot of understanding of the science. What Robin's studying is the history, right? How do we get here? What happened? What are the choices people make? What I think Vegapunk understands is the science side of it. Like, why is the world in this way scientifically, right? Like, where do these powers come from? Things like that. And so I think that there's a way to really have these two types of stories where Robin is still going to have a lot to explore, even if Vegapunk gets through everything that he's saying. But to me, it feels like he really does. I mean, we know that they're not going to stop it because this is the Egghead Island incident. And at this point, like it's clear that the Egghead Island incident is called that, not just because the Elder Star is showing up, not just because of Nika Luffy, but because something crazy is going to be revealed to the world. And so at the very
Sure,
least,
for
whatever
sure.
part of what he says gets out is going to be, you know, something that could turn the world on its head. I do have to just ask,
Yeah.
do you still think it's going to be something that we already know as readers?
I think that yes, to some degree. Like it might. So here's what I think. I think it's all the information is going to be along the lines of here are the horrible things that the world government has done. Like we already know that they stamped out the Ancient Kingdom, that they probably committed some kind of genocide, and so on and so forth, right? But we don't know any of the details about what actually happened. So, and the rest of the world doesn't even know that the world government like has done this because it's taboo to research, right? I think the reveal could be something along those lines so that the readers maybe get some more information because we're learning details about this vague period in one piece of history, and the rest of the world is also kind of being enlightened on what the world government really represents.
Well, the thing is, based on everything I just said with the science and the history, I obviously think you're wrong. I think it's going to be scientific. at the very least. That would be more on the history side. I don't know why Vegapunk will be the one to reveal that, but it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see. I think it was a good chapter on the whole, just like a lot of action. And I'm excited to see what comes next week. As I told you, these next two chapters are the ones that could have the word plays that say One Piece. So it could be we're gonna learn some crazy stuff. We're gonna learn some crazy stuff, man. We're gonna learn some
Oh my
crazy
God, that's crazy.
stuff. Speaking of crazy
Yeah.
stuff, it's
Yeah.
time for awards show, the segment where we give crazy awards to crazy moments in the chapter. Abraham,
Yeah.
what award? You've told me you got a good award, so I'm pretty interested to hear.
I do.
What do you got coming today?
I have a question for you first before I tell you the award.
Okay,
When
okay.
you think of handsome bald men, can you tell me like one celebrity that comes to mind?
Jason Statham.
Close. I was actually thinking about Mr. Clean.
Mr.
Mr. Clean.
Clear.
Yeah. He's got the skin color
Calvin.
right, but now
Yeah.
let me tell you something about Mr. Clean, right? Mr. Clean, he's very handsome. He gets the job done, right?
Right.
And he puts in work, right? My Mr. Clean, the award I'm giving out this week is going to be going to Mr. Dinas Juro. He is going to receive the Mr. Clean Award because he's been cleaned up. He cleaned up all the Pacifista, right? He's bald-headed. And I'm not going to lie, I know he looks like Gandhi. He doesn't look like Mr. Clean, but he kind of does look a little bit like Mr. Clean. So I'm going to give my award this week to Venus Juro for cleaning up. He is the Mr. Clean Award.
You're like, who's the real symbol of peace? Is it Gandhi or is it Mr. Clean?
I know a lot of relationships that have been salvaged by a clean home. Some with your partner, maybe they're not doing their fair share. There's like some grimy dishes. All of a sudden, you pick up one of these like Mr. Clean brushes or something like that, start doing this work, and your relationship is saved. I feel like Mr. Clean is underrated.
That's
Also, low
incredible. That's
key,
incredible.
Gandhi, all the great things that he did, Gandhi apparently was a racist. Apparently, he thought very, very little of African people, thought they were less intelligent. So, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. I feel like I'm rocking with Mr. Clean.
Over Gandhi. Okay,
Yeah.
Abraham Ogbalase, Mr. Clean over Gandhi. Write that down, record that in history. The award I'm given this week is the Like a Champ Award. You know why I'm giving that award
Oh,
to Saint Jupiter?
no, who? Oh, it's the Jupiter, like a
Yeah,
champ.
because he swallowed like a
He's falling in
champ.
it like a champ. God, you're not doing yourself any favors with respect to this worm. I don't know. I don't know
I
what.
couldn't resist. I couldn't resist.
No.
I was like, Abraham's gonna come to this chapter ready to bust my balls for more mouth content. And I was like, I can get out ahead of this one.
Make sure you clear your search history regularly. That's all I gotta say. And use incognito mode, because I don't want to know what kind of weird ass stuff you get yourself into.
It's very vanilla. Don't even worry about that. But I do search DuckDuckGo instead of Google. Oh man, is it time for some theories, Abraham?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
You think
I brought
so?
two with me.
Yes, sir. I brought one, so I think it's up to you to go
Okay.
first.
Okay, I have a funny theory and a cool theory. Which one do you want to hear first?
I would love to hear the cool theory first so we can end on a good note.
Okay. So this is a theory from Reddit by Jeremy Podom, I think is the user. And the idea is that the One Piece is essentially Pangaea. So it was a supercontinent that the ancient kingdom lived on, and that at some point, maybe using the ancient weapons, the world government broken up into all these tiny little islands, and that's why we have world, like the geography of the One Piece world set up like that, and that those scattered pieces of this former supercontinent are bound together by magnetism. That's why you get all of this weird navigational stuff happening on the Grand Line. And this person speculates that the way to reassemble this supercontinent would have to be by awakening maybe it was broken up by the ancient weapons, but they said the key to reassembling the ancient kingdom's continent is to use the awakened devil fruit that broke it up. So maybe it's like the Gura Gura no Mi broke it up, which is Whitebeard's fruit. But the more interesting one was if the Chop Chop fruit, Buggy's fruit, was responsible for breaking up this island, then the Roger Pirates might have laughed at the realization that the fate of the world rests in Buggy's hands.
There's a part of me that likes them laughing at the idea that the fate of the world rests in Buggy's hands and with his devil fruit. I, at the very least, got some amusement out of that. And what I'll say is I'm at the very least interested. Like, one thing I think would be interesting if it came out in this big Vegapunk reveal is if we got some kind of understanding for why the world is a world of water, right? And that this would be the situation that gives us an answer to why the world is one of water, because you had this ancient Pangaea that the world was, that eventually was split up by the ancient weapons, and now we've been given this, and that would give us something for Vegapunk to talk about. But no, man, this is an F-class theory, man. What are you talking about, man? Like, bro, the chop chop fruit.
I mean,
the chop chop fruit being about putting the world back together and the fate of the world is gonna rest in Buggy's hands, man. Come on, cuz.
you don't have to think it's gonna happen, but this is an S-class theory if I've ever heard one. This is amazing. I can't believe this guy put this together.
Like I said, you get an intriguing potential moment, but it's the fact that I laughed at the end and that was presented as a serious theory. I think there's going to be interesting reasons for why Roger laughed. I don't think that the fate of the world resting in Buggy's hands is going to be that reason. F-class theory. that's what I got for you. My theory is from Hidden Island this week, and it's that the ancient kingdom decided to set itself back because of the conflict and violence brought forth in a technologically advanced world. Im was the god assigned to sit atop that world, and the world government and elites see themselves as people making necessary but difficult decisions in order to keep order in the world. At Laugh Tale, Luffy will have the choice to either re-unleash technology onto it or continue with the world as it currently exists. Roger and his crew decided to keep the current world, but this is what Rayleigh means when he says to the crew, you'll have to decide for yourself if you get there, like what to do for yourself if you get there. S-class or F-class.
So this idea is basically like, you know, there's some, the ancient kingdom realized there was going to be like mutually assured destruction. They fought back against like the world government using the tools that they had. So they kind of just took the L in order to protect, like, for the greater good of the world, kind of.
Exactly.
Is that the gist of the theory? Yeah. I like it. I think it's fun. I don't think it's, I don't think I can give it S class because I do expect the Straw Hats to, or I do expect the ancient weapons to play a role in the story going forward, but I don't really expect the Straw Hats to use them to overthrow the world's government. So I'm going to have to say F class.
I didn't say anything about the ancient weapons now. I don't know what you said about that.
Oh, okay. I thought when you were talking about like advanced technology stuff that you were talking about the ancient weapons.
No, we're saying just because the previous world we know was technologically advanced, it was basically a decision made by certain leaders to shut that off because it brought things, you know, it's like we don't trust humanity to do the right thing with this type of power sort of decision.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I'll give it an S class just because it does give a, like that whole conversation with Rayleigh and Robin, I think where he's just like, you might come to different conclusions. That's an interesting answer for that, and I'm intrigued by the theory. I don't really think that's going to happen, but whether I believe a theory is going to come true or not, I don't think should determine if it's S class or F class. I like the idea of this theory, so I'll give it an S class.
Thank you, Abraham. That was very big of you. What I like about this theory, and I'll say, one of the things that gets brought up in the video is I guess there's some parallel manga that came out in 2001 called Wings of Marie that a lot of YouTubers, I guess, have drawn comparisons to. I think one thing that I really like about this theory is we have seen Oda do a good job with everyone except for Kaido of writing some amount of complexity in them as a villain. Even Gecko Moria, we understood he lost his crew, so he wanted to build these shadows. Someone like Crocodile, okay, I guess Crocodile is just kind of a bad guy, but I guess there feels to be like there's some amount of loss and resentment towards the world from his previous trips to the Grand Line. I guess to me, no one feels just like purely evil in the world. And even with Kaido, who I don't think was written particularly well, we see a young, smiling Kaido. I think when we talk about the Elder Stars, are we just going to end up with the decision that Im and the Elder Stars are just these evil people who decide to rule over the world because they're bad? Or are we going to get some amount of complexity for them? And I really like the idea of bringing this in as an example of what they might be trying to do and what they might think, why they might think they're doing stuff that seems like it's evil to the rest of us.
Yeah, I think Oda does typically write complex antagonists. I don't expect that to be the case for Imu and the Gorosei. I think the brilliant part of what we're getting from this clash with the world government is that it's a philosophical one, right? It's about like almost like the whole thing, order versus chaos, right? And I think where Oda is being nuanced is he's showing us two extremes. One extreme is absolute like dictatorship and oppression that's done by the world government, and the other extreme is the pure chaos that is like the Blackbeard pirates, right? And I think Oda is trying to like the whole story is Oda's, I guess, ideology about how people should maybe live their lives or like what is the best. Maybe not how to live their lives, but you get what I'm saying. Like, how you should go about trying to live as a person. I think he's basically saying, like, don't impinge on other people's freedoms, but also, but also unlimited freedom is a. I feel like I'm doing a horrible job of trying to get my point across.
That's
I
true, but
think there's not really much complex.
I think the point
Yeah.
I'm making is that the Elder Stars, having made that choice, is bad because it's taking away freedom, but they might be doing it because they think it's the right thing to do, in the same way that it seems like Blackbeard believes that what
Maybe.
he's doing is
Yeah.
the right thing to do. But what's your last theory for me?
Yeah. My last theory, like I said, is a joke theory, but the idea is that Zoro is still a bounty hunter. And he's waiting for Luffy's bounty to be high enough so that he can betray him and bring in that cash. And this, I should say, is not my theory. It's another Reddit theory by Dr. Doomu.
Ooh, Dr.
But yeah.
Doomu. I'll give this one an S-class humor theory. We had the Kuina is
Yeah.
Mihawk theory. What I like about this one is we've seen that bounty hunters have kind of just gone nowhere in the last part of the series, and this would really bring back something that we came to know and love when the only people we had were Johnny, Yosaku, and Zoro as bounty hunters. And, as someone who for many years, probably not anymore, unfortunately, was actually Zoro is the tank who's stronger than Luffy despite being the first mate. I was one of those conspiracy theorists. This is a great opportunity to say, hey, Zoro's just waiting and buttering him up to eventually betray him. I think it's funny.
Yeah.
It's an S-class theory.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I thought it was hilarious.
Very good one. You got a real laugh out of me. So
Thank
that's
you.
all we got for One Piece. Time to get into some of the fun stuff that's happening in the rest of the world that we think is interesting. You know, a few weeks ago, we talked about Shohei Ohtani, who at that point was enmeshed in a gambling scandal. And it turns out now, despite our skepticism, that Shohei Ohtani was cleared after a federal investigation co-led by the Internal Revenue Service's Criminal Division at the Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. Attorney's Office, who determined that his interpreter, Mizuhara, who had worked with him since 2018, had direct access to his bank account and used that access to illicitly funnel millions of dollars to an illegal bookmaker in California, where sports betting is banned, according to prosecutors. Now, I want to read to you because in some of these articles, we have some of the texts that he was actually sending to the bookie. And I think you'll just have a good laugh reading, hearing some of these. You
Okay.
know, we'll get a reaction of what you think.
Okay.
On November 2nd or 14th, I'm terrible at the sports betting thing, huh? LOL. Any chance you can bump me again? As you know, you don't have to worry about me not paying. June 24th, 2023. I have a problem, LOL. November 19th, 2023. I'll be honest. I ended up losing a lot of money on crypto the last couple of years, and I took on a huge hit, obviously, with the sports too. Just wanted to ask, is there any way we can settle on an amount? I've lost way too much on the site already. Of course, I know it's my fault. And then in November, again, the bookie, who was unable to get in touch with Mizuhara, texted him that he was watching Ohtani walk his dog in Newport Beach and said, I'm going to go up and talk to him and ask how I can get in touch with you since you're not responding. Please call me back immediately. Like, bro,
This
this bookmaker was like, I'm about to
man,
go break Shohei Ohtani's legs,
bro, no, this guy is an addict. He's 100% an addict. That's crazy. But so I thought the story was that he stole the money from Shohei, right? That's what they said. He stole it. But it seems like Shohei just gave it to him.
Well, so
So
no,
was he
initially they
lying?
said, initially he said Shohei gave it to him to pay off his debts knowingly. And then Shohei came out and said, Shohei's people acted up and said, no, actually, I've been defrauded massively. This dude stole all this money from me, which actually does seem like it was the case.
I mean, I guess if you gave someone the money with the intent of them paying you back and they don't pay you back, I guess that is theft. But I feel like these texts are just, you know, like, why? Okay, how many? Let me ask you something. How many times do I have to show you who I am before you believe me? You know what I mean? Like, how many of these texts do you have to, like,
Oh, bro,
receive
this to the
about?
book. This to the bookmaker.
Oh, I thought these were to Shohei.
No, man, no, man. It's like he's not gonna be able to. Like Shohei, not gonna be. He can't. He knows. Shohei knows he can't pay him back. He made like 300K.
Oh my God. Okay. That makes a lot more sense. I thought he was texting all of this to Shohei and he was just like,
No,
bro,
no, no.
I need more money. Okay. That's crazy though. This man has a problem. I actually
This
have
man has
let
a
me I'll tell you a
problem.
funny like I have a funny story. I was volunteering at a hospital back in like 2017, right? And we had this lounge for the volunteers where, you know, we usually just like eat lunch and whatnot. And one day I sat down and there was this, I think, Filipino lady sitting next to me that I'd never met before, but she introduced herself to me. We were talking for like 5 minutes or whatever. And then I thought she was playing a game on her phone that looked like Candy Crush to me. I was like, oh, are you playing Candy Crush? And she's like, no, I'm actually gambling. This is like a gambling game. I was like,
Oh my God.
oh, okay.
Right,
And
right.
she then proceeded She then proceeded to tell me her whole life story about how gambling has ruined her life as she is actively
Oh
gambling.
no.
She's
Oh
telling
my
me like
God.
how she
Bro.
can't pay for like her mother's like health bills, all of these things. And I'm like, I met you 5 minutes ago. Also,
Right, right.
you are gambling while you're telling
Right,
me how
right.
gambling has ruined your
Like,
life.
do you want to give me your phone? Do you like want to give me your phone right now to get away from this? Do you need me to like follow you around and like make sure you don't go to any casinos or riverboats? Oh my God. Yeah, that's absolutely horrible. Is
No,
that like this dude does clearly have a problem. Just like him, he's clearly like millions of dollars down that he can't pay back. And what's crazy is that we ended up with like probably the most famous person in Asia, definitely the most famous person in Japan, getting threatened to have his legs broke by a bookie because his, at least that's what I think is implicitly in that, oh, I'm watching Ohtani walk his dog, I'm gonna go up and talk to him. That's what I think is implied there. And we, because this dude's
dang.
translator was stealing his money, which kind of unbelievable. And I also wish I had $5 million. I wish I had the kind of money where I didn't notice that $5 million was just out of my bank account, because I promise you I would
That's
never
crazy.
that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. And that kind of money, you have to have people watching your money, right? Like, he's not managing his own financials. Someone clearly like dropped the ball at some point, right?
Yeah,
Because
like
$5 million doesn't just disappear.
well, it's the bank being like, oh, are you Shohei Ohtani? And he's like, oh, I'm a Japanese dude. Like, I speak Japanese. They're like, okay, yeah, you must be Shohei Ohtani. Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, totally, totally crazy, bonkers story. Now, I think Alex is supposed to jump in and give us our last story. That's about right?
So last week we were talking a little bit about our good friend David's relationship, and not once but twice this New York Times article ended up in my email that I think ties in also to some of the conversations Jordan, you and I were having offline. And that is, can a sexless marriage be a happy one? I think there's a lot of ways we can take this. We were talking about the boundaries of open relationships, platonic relationships that can evolve further. But Jordan, I want to kick it off to you first. Do you think you could be in a platonic relationship? Or are you looking for someone more like Saint Jupiter who's going to hold it down for you?
Well, I mean, let me be clear, if I'm in a if I was in if I was in a sexless marriage or relationship, I would sure certainly think that I would have someone doing me like Saint Jupiter and holding it down. That's all that's what I'm saying. I think that this is one of these things where in our society, we a lot of the times conflate what is sometimes important with for having someone who's like a life partner, or even having someone who you might want to raise kids with someone that you necessarily need to find romance with. Like in a lot of ways, right? Like if I think of the person who I might want to, if I had kids, raise kids with, a lot of the qualifications for that person would just be about like, some of the values we share, the ways we would actually want to raise the kid, where we might want to live and move, the kind of lifestyle we would have, like things like money suddenly become a lot more important, and like the way we want to spend that. And like none of those things actually have anything to do with, I don't want to say something crass. I could start saying something crass. Someone that I would like to have sex with. You know what I'm saying? And so to me, I think there's a lot of appeal in the idea of if you had someone who was more of a platonic life partner, which is something that gets mentioned in the article, right? That's potentially different from the person that you're like have romance and or are having sex with. Or at the very least, if you're having a marriage, why can you not go outside of the marriage to have some of those needs fulfilled if you're not actually having sex in the marriage? And I think that I mean, that's even one of the things that we talked about in the episode about in Japan, when people say, oh, going to a brothel isn't cheating because it's just, getting Saint Jupiter, some might say. then that's an example of the idea that your marriage needs to be all your needs, I think results in a lot of letdown that ends up a lot of like unhappy marriages and a lot of people being let down when they could find some of those things elsewhere.
Okay, so I feel like you said a lot there, and there's a lot that I want to say. So I'm going to try and go at least one at a time. One, I think having can you have a happy sexless marriage? Yes, but I think that needs to be something that you're both aware of going into that relationship. When I read the article, they're talking about how the girl in the article doesn't really feel affectionate unless. Not affectionate. She doesn't really feel like she wants to be intimate in that way unless, there are certain things that are met, unless she's really, really in the mood. And so they said they went like a year without having sex. They can go months without doing it. And literally her male partner was, I mean, actually he was okay with the situation that they had because he still loved this woman. But they point out that he's like, yeah, I do hope that I would like to have sex. I'm always in the mood to have sex, but I don't want to like force this onto her, which I think in general is healthy. Sex has to be consensual. No one should be having to put out if they don't want to. But if that is not the expectation that was communicated beforehand, like if we when we're just dating, we were having sex regularly, and then
Bro,
all of a sudden this is a change that happened. Like, no, I think I personally think that would be grounds for divorce, failure to consummate the marriage, right?
I think failure to consummate the marriage I can't do, but I feel like most of the time when we talk about sexless marriages, they're not talking about ones that people came in not having sex or having a shared expectation of not having sex. I think it's ones that turned that way after people that had sex previously.
That's fair. The other thing I'd say is while I agree the emotional connection that you can have with a lifelong partner is to some degree independent of what attracts you physically, one, I think the act of being physically intimate does bring you more emotionally closer to your partner. And that depends on some people, right? Some people can be very can emotionally separate sex very, very easily, and some people can't, right? But yeah, so while I agree that they're independent things, I do think being physically intimate does help you create that bond with your lifelong partner. And the last thing I want to say is that on Reddit, I see a lot of these, oh, me and my wife decided we wanted to have an open relationship and blah 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 blah. And then inevitably, somebody catches
Hey,
feelings or
blah
someone
blah
does
blah blah blah. What you mean,
like
blah 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 blah? What? Oh
no,
yeah.
like so they these two people have like these two people that are in a happy relationship have that they decide they want to maybe spice up the marriage or something like that, and start to open it up. And one person in And almost all of these stories, one person inevitably finds out that they're not comfortable with the situation that they've just created, and the relationship is unable to return to the point that it was at beforehand. So, I guess my point is, while the perspective that you have about, oh, I have this person that I love and I connect with on an emotional level, and that's a completely separate person from the person I sleep with. I think that you're being too idealistic with that take. I don't think that that's something that I could do with anyone personally. So I don't know if I agree that you can have a sexless, happy marriage, I guess is my end of going.
Bro, that's first of all, that's crazy how I have a friend who was actually in a monogamous relationship, and it turned out that her boyfriend caught feelings for someone else, and then they ended up breaking up. And no one blames that on monogamy. No one's like, oh, monogamy's untenable because there's a million stories of these things happening where someone actually leaves a relationship because of what is a transgression in that case, right? And so in the same way, when we say, oh, if there's, an open relationship and then someone catches feelings, like that's actually like a flaw of an emotion of an open relationship. I think it's like an unfair standard to be holding people to. Well, you're making a confused face. What's the confusion on your face?
I guess I don't, and you can explain this again once I ask you this question, but I don't know how you can blame that situation on monogamy, right? Unless your point is that
My point is that the same
the
thing
partner.
happens. My point is the same thing happens in both monogamous relationships and open relationships, and having this more strict boundary is not the thing that actually is going to like stop that.
Let me get to what I was going to ask you, because I heard what you said. I just don't. So in your friend's situation, right? I don't think that the reason why they fell in love with someone else and decided to pursue this other person is because they were in a monogamous relationship. Like, the fact that they were in a relationship did not cause them to catch feelings for this person,
Right,
right?
and so
Which is
my point
why people,
is that
let me finish. Which is why I kind of made a confused face when you're like, people don't say, like, blame monogamy for this relationship failing. Because I don't think that the relationship failed because they were monogamous. I think the relationship failed because this person emotionally connected with someone else, right? Whereas in the case of these open relationships, I think the reason why these formerly monogamous relationships fail when you open them is because the act of inviting other people into your intimate life is what that, like, it then feeds back onto your original relationship, and that's why that has failed. So that's why I was confused.
I know, but
You
this is
get
the
what you
whole
said.
point I'm making. The whole point I'm making is that because, like, if it happens in monogamous relationships, it is not definitively the fault. Like, that is not happening because you have opened your relationship. Because it happens in relationships that are not open also. And so what I'm suggesting is whatever layers are beneath that, whether it's someone being unhappy with their partner for whatever reason, there are a lot of situations in which someone might get feelings and leave, but it's not about the structure of the relationship. Because in a lot of these open relationships, the structure of the relationship is actually such that you can't have like a second girlfriend. You just have like an open relationship. You can't have like a second, like full-on partner, right? There are always going to be other people coming in and out of your life, whether it's friends, coworkers, things like that, the kinds of people that people generally tended to have affairs with for like years and years and years. And so I think that what frustrates me is this sense that, oh, well, it's because you let other people in. And I think that's very clearly not the actual reason that people end up in these kinds of transgressions. Not to mention, I think that the times that that happens get so much more attention than the people who do it successfully, right? Like, to be fair, my relationship was a year long, but we were in an open relationship and it was really successful, and there were really good things about the relationship, and a lot of good things came from the relationship being open. I have a cousin who they were monogamous for a little while and then opened their relationship. They are now, are they married? I don't know if they're actually getting married. I think they did. They have a kid together. I think they were gonna get married just so they could, like, take care of each other if someone's in the hospital. But they've been really successful. And I think a lot of these stories don't get shared online of people just being like, hey, here's how being in a monogamous in a non-monogamous relationship has been really successful and like what it's brought to us, in the same way that people do when it's just like, oh, we broke up because someone ended up getting feelings elsewhere.
I agree that those situations are probably underreported. It's kind of like this thing in science where we say we don't publish negative data, right? You only publish positive data. In this case, it's the opposite. You only hear the things that people come out with are the stories of, like, horrible breakups and stuff. I agree. Well, and but while I agree that those successful relationships are probably underreported, I and this is entirely anecdotal, I still do think that they work out less frequently than they do. Now, I don't have any evidence for that. It's
Entirely
not like I have,
anecdotally,
it's not
yeah.
like
Abraham, I thought you
it's
were
entirely anecdotal, right? Sorry,
a.
wait, what? How was that? I missed what you said.
I said, I thought you were a scientist, MD, PhD, right? Here you're just coming in with some crazy hypotheses and unfounded.
So obviously there's no census that's out there to like report
Let me
on
tell you,
this.
because this man clearly never took a philosophy class in undergrad, because the way logic works, and or just like analysis, right? The way logic works is like, if your argument is that the cause for these non-monogamous relationships failing is because they were non-monogamous and someone else gets feelings, then if I provide a counterexample, an example that's like people end up with the same result despite it not being a non-monogamous relationship, that disproves that hypothesis, that is the only reason, that's like the reason that can be directly attributed to the outcome.
So I agree, but I never said that that was the only reason. I guess I would say that the reason why, when those open relationships do fail, and I'm specifically talking about monogamous relationships that become open relationships, when they do fail, I think the primary reason why they do fail is because of the changes that occur after you've opened up your relationship. I don't think that's the only thing. Like, yes, there are other variables, like who are the people that are involved in this relationship? Are you a Jordan or are you an Abraham, right? Like, you're probably going to have more be more successful at having an open relationship than me. One time I've one time tried to have not an open relationship, but a casual relationship with a girl, where I was just like, I'm not trying to have a girlfriend right now. I'm not trying to see anyone long term. We can be intimate with each other, but that's about it. Like, I don't want this to be like a formal relationship. And she was on board with it. But then basically, there was like a week in my, like a couple weeks into it, something had happened in the lab, and I was like really, really upset for like a week. And not at her, but just in general, I was just very frustrated about stuff and upset. So like, I didn't text her for like a week after like one of our dates. And I felt bad the whole week, because I was the whole time I'm thinking she is expecting me to reach out to her and communicate with her. But I've said many times, we're not in this kind, I mean, she's not my girlfriend, right? Like, that we're in a casual relationship. And so I feel like I've earned the right to have my, like, seek out my own peace. And right now I just don't want to talk to anyone. But I also like at the same time felt bad for how I knew I was making her feel. So at that point, I went, like, the next time we went on our date, I was like, look, I think this is the last time we should do this, because I don't think this is something that is really compatible for me. So yes, I agree that there are certain people, certain personality features that people can have that maybe are more conducive to an open relationship. And yeah, that is a variable that will help determine whether or not they succeed or fail. But I still do think at the end of the day that transitioning into an open relationship, when it does fail, the reason is usually because of the changes that have occurred following opening it up.
Well, I once saw a girl casually for 10 months. I don't know how she felt about it all the time. We had clear conversations. I said, here's how I feel, and like, here's what's gonna be. And she said, hey, I talked to my therapist. I wanna keep having fun and keep having sex. And that was great. And I tell you what, I don't know how I made her feel all the rest of the time, but I made her feel good once a week. I made her feel good at least once a week. Anyway, that's all we have for time. Thank you to Alex, our producer friend, who hasn't asked any leading questions today, but we want some more of that, and for helping out behind the scenes. Come back next Sunday for, wow, a second chapter in a row, our thoughts on chapter 1113. No more scratchiness in this point in time. And in the meantime, we are your friends who read One Piece. Help us get more likes by liking, sharing, and giving us 5 stars, and following us on YouTube at Friends Who Read One Piece to see Abraham's ugly mug and all the thumbnails. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Take care.